it's funny because in the beginning, like, grandparents didn't really understand what it was. And then, like, when they saw me on TV and stuff, then they understood. They were like, oh, wow. Like, they finally understood, like, what I've been doing.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra. And welcome to Hamro Yatra. In today's episode, we have Suprina Thapa, the first Nepali mainstream TV presenter in the UK. Most of my guests are born in Nepal and have moved overseas at some point in their lives. So it was very interesting to hear Suprina's story of being a third generation British Nepali, the differences and similarities we share. In this episode, we explore Suprina's love and drive for presenting, how she got started in this field, and where she sees this path taking her. She walks us through how she processes setbacks, hate messages, and most importantly, uses every opportunity and roadblock to grow and progress. She has a good head on her shoulders, and I'm personally very excited to see her kicking goals. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling generous. You can also financially support us on thisishamroyatra.com/support. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Suprina. So glad to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
So Suprina, we usually start the episode with some icebreakers. The first one being, if you could choose any superpower, what would you pick?
Oh, that's a hot... You know what? I was actually speaking about this with my friend the other day. I feel like loads of people pick invisibility, and I was those some people. I always used to pick invisibility. But that's because... But I feel like when people pick it, they have not good agenda. So, for example, listening to people's conversations or listening to what people are saying about you, because I feel as if you want to be invisible for that reason, you're just going to drive yourself crazy, because no one wants to know everything that someone's saying about them. And obviously there's going to be some things that you don't want to hear. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think I would want to know everything that people think about me, because I just think if you think that, whatever. But
I feel like it's just way too much information.
But I would pick invisibility just so that I can go on the plane and go on holiday and travel the world without paying anything. So that's what I would want to be.
Wait, I need to ask you this. So even if you're invisible, you'll still occupy space, wouldn't you?
See, that's the thing. And then another thing I was thinking, I'm going to have to be naked, right? Because I can't be wearing clothes, because I'd just be floating clothes.
Exactly. Like, if you really think about the specifics,
yeah.
Like, if you want to be invisible to travel and, like, go on the plane without having to pay for it, firstly, yes, you might have to be naked. Second, you'll still be occupying space.
Yeah.
So if the flight's full, then where would you sit? Like, how's that going to work?
Exactly. Luckily, my mom is a travel agent and she owns her own travel. So I will just ask her, what is a seat, or reserve a seat for me on the plane? And to other people, I just won't show up, and I'll just be there. Or, like, tell me what seats are free and I'll just go and occupy the seats.
Love that. If you could have one dish for the rest of your life, is anything that pops into your mind?
I love Nawari food. If I can have, like, just Nawari food for the rest of my life, like, I love choila so much that I don't, like, I would have, like, any sort of Nawari food for the rest of my life, specifically choila, alu chalak. I love that. And something else I would have, I don't know how to pronounce it properly, so I don't want to be, you know, in my family, we call it chapati, you know, the...
Oh, the chapati, yep.
Yeah, I would have that for the rest of my life.
if you could go back into time and visit any particular history or historical moment in Nepal, is there anything that you'd like to go back into?
Oh my God, my answer might be a bit controversial. If I could go back in time, I would go back into the time where the royal family passed away and kind of seeing that. And if I could just be there, maybe be invisible and see what actually happened, I would love to do that, because I feel like there's a lot of stories that go around. Specifically, like, there's some things you can't even say in Nepal about it. And I'm kind of more outspoken, so I'm just like, I have so many questions. And like, my granddad in Nepal, like, he's part of the army and he doesn't like speaking about any of that. But I just have so many questions, and I feel like the stories that we're being told aren't true. So yeah,
I think a lot of people feel that way. And I do have some guests who say, when I ask this question, they're going back to history is that particular moment. And I do have to agree with them as well, because I remember growing up in Nepal, I remember this day very vividly, waking up to the news of the royal family getting massacred. And for me, if I had to go back into time, I'd choose the same moment as well, just so I could know. And if I couldn't be, if I wasn't able to tell anybody else, that's fine. Like, yeah. But I just want to know. Now, Suprina, most of my guests that I have on this show, I would say 90% of them have been born in Nepal and have their childhood in Nepal. Since you are second generation British Nepalese, I'm curious to know what your childhood was like. Tell us about young Suprina.
I'm not sure, but I think I'm third generation. My mom was born here as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that makes me third generation. Yeah, which is like, people do assume that I was born here, but my parents wasn't. But yeah, because it's not common, like not common at all. Yeah. And I'm sure that from what I know, I'm the only one, including my cousins and some of my family friends, that are third generation. Yeah, so for me, I literally had a very, very British childhood growing up. And like I said, all my mom, my mamas, all of them are born here. So I grew up with them. So they kind of done the second generation thing for me and my cousins and me and my siblings. So we already integrated into the British society really, really well. So the difference that I probably have is I really struggle to integrate with the Nepali community. Like, I can't speak the language. And even if I try to, because of my British accent, I get made fun of because I can't pronounce the words properly. So it kind of stops me. So there was always quite a barrier, and I've always been quite comfortable in being in the society that I'm, like the British society, and like all my friends are like so many different cultures. And I was just more comfortable with that rather than spending time with Nepali people. But with my family, though, they were very still traditional. Like, I would still do traditional things, because my grandparents, they live here. They came here in the 70s and they opened up a Nepali restaurant.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's so crazy. So that's why my mom and my mamas have been here since then, and they came over when they were so young, my grandparents. Literally, so they always teach us about our history. They always teach us about Nepali tradition. So we still celebrate like Bhai Tikka, Dasai. Like, I'm still very much in my culture. And I do go back to Nepal before COVID every like 2 years.
Yeah.
Because my dad's parents live there. So I'm still quite into it with culture. It was just more easier for me to, with my social life and me growing up, just to basically be a normal British child. Like, that's what I was. And then I was Nepali, like, at home and stuff. And when I was young, I never really knew that much about Nepali culture to tell my friends and stuff. So basically, me being in like media and presenting and like presenting about Nepali things is me discovering myself at the same time, and me finding out information about myself. And kind of like, because I've always been quite left out in the Nepali community because I'm third generation. And nobody that has the same experience as me. So kind of sharing my experience, and I don't know, I feel like that was
That's very insightful, because a lot of the times you wouldn't think those are the challenges that you would have faced growing up in the UK, like being a bit disconnected from the Nepali community, because Nepali community is massive in the UK. right? There's so many functions and events happening. So thank you for sharing your story with us. I think you're doing really well in terms of trying to connect. I saw that on Instagram, you're trying to do like Nepali inspirational people.
I actually made that because I didn't know. And I was asking my mom, like, because there was things going around. I think this was during the whole like Black Lives Matter protest and everything about influential people in the Black community. And it just made me reflect that I don't know any inspirational people in the Nepali community. And it's not because there isn't any, it's because I never knew and I was never educated. So I thought if I'm feeling this way, maybe there's more young people that do feel this way. So I thought, let me just start a series where I can learn as well some Nepali inspirations where some, if someone asks me, I could be like, oh, there's this person. Yeah. Like, yeah. So yeah, that's another reason why I started that. And it's from my experiences growing up.
Definitely. Now, Suprina, in 2019, you graduated from University of Kent with a degree in politics and social anthropology, right? So what made you decide on that degree?
So basically, I have always, because I'm a TV presenter, I've always wanted to be a presenter from when I was like young in secondary school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I knew that I didn't need to go to university to be a presenter. Some people do. Some people do broadcast journalism, and that's fine. But I knew that the presenting that I wanted to go into, which is entertainment, is more about experience than it is theory stuff. So people usually broadcast journalism if they want to get into news presenting, which is more like information heavy and more like hands-on, whereas I'm more of a light-hearted entertainment kind of presenter. So I knew that I didn't have to go to university, but obviously being Nepali and like my Nepali parents, they kind of always saw me going to university. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a thing where I didn't really have a choice. Like I kind of had to.
I love that the Nepali-ness has come through that.
Literally. So like my parents still might be British or modern, but still they have like these traditional.
Yep.
So I said, like, I promised my mom that I would get her a degree and I would go to university. And in secondary school A-levels, the one thing that I was known to be really good at and I would get top marks in was politics.
Oh, right.
I was really good at essay writing. I was really good at like debates, and I was like passionate about politics. I still am like passionate about politics. So I thought, you know what, let me just do the subject that I'm the best at. But then I thought politics alone might be a bit boring. So let me just do something I've never heard of before, something interesting, which was social anthropology, which is the study of cultures.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm really interested in culture. So I thought, let's just do that. So yeah, that's the main reason why I went to university and why I studied that degree.
When I saw that you studied that degree, I almost thought, well, that actually makes sense. Because as a presenter, like, you need to have that sort of like knowledge, right, about politics, what's happened, or like cultures, and you can use that when you're presenting. Even if you're in the entertainment industry, like, you meet so many different personalities. So I mm-hmm. thought maybe it might be a conscious choice.
You know what, maybe I should start saying that. Yes, I knew that this is what is going to help me do it. It actually wasn't. But after going to university, like what you're saying, I realized was true. It actually did help me. So I went in thinking, oh, like I'm going to waste 3 years. But in my head, I didn't want to waste 3 years of my life, because still at university, I was doing presenting at my university, like the societies, the media society. Yeah. I did that. But also within my degree, I found out a lot about different cultures and like theory stuff that helps me to this day. So it wasn't a complete, you know, waste of time.
And you said that you knew very early on that you wanted to be a presenter. Was it since your childhood or once you were an adult?
So in the beginning, it wasn't specifically presenting. It was more, I want to be on TV. So that was like the thing, like, I know that I love talking, I love expressing myself, and I just knew that that's the kind of field I want to be in, because I don't want to be in something where, from young, I always felt like I don't want to be in something where I'm not happy. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work. And I didn't want to work a 9-to-5 personally, but I know that there's people that want to work a 9-to-5, and that's completely fine as well. I hate sometimes when creatives say things like, oh, I can never work a 9-to-5, what a boring job, which is not true, because I have a lot of friends that work 9-to-5s and really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's about what you're passionate about. So with me, I just knew that I just wanted something more like creative and stuff. So at the beginning, I wanted to be an actress. I thought like that was the way that for me to get onto TV. Mm. And in my head and growing up, it was the only way I saw. I never saw a kind of different way to get on TV, because usually you just see actors and actresses.
Yeah.
You just. So I went to, obviously, secondary school. I studied drama.
Mm.
I did drama in A-levels. And it's only when, like, I realized doing drama in school that I, like, this is just not for me. Like, I was a good actress, but that I realized I'm good at playing characters that are similar to me. So similar to my age, that was a girl, that just had the same personality as me. Whereas I wasn't good at acting other roles, like maybe a mother or a grandma. Mm. And I feel like with actors, they need to put themselves in any role. They need to be ready to become that role. And I realized that if I want to get into industry, especially creative industry, I need to be very good at it to proper excel. And I didn't want to get into something where I knew in my heart and my head, I'm not really good at this. I'm just doing it because it's of the sake of it. And I'm not really passionate about it. So when I was like 16, 17 years old, my Sana Mama and Sana Maiju, for my birthday, they knew I was going through this whole thing of where I didn't know. Like, so for my birthday, they asked me, like, have you ever thought of like TV presenting or just presenting? And in the beginning, I actually didn't know what that was. Like, I just didn't know that was like a career option. I just thought presenters that you see on TV, they're famous from before and they ended up being in present. Like, I just thought you had to be, you like, you can't have a career in presenting, basically. You can't start like, that's what I thought.
Like, you can't start like that.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. You have to do something else and then kind of go into that. So anyways, they got me a presenting experience day where I actually trained with, just for one day, I trained with a Sky presenter and I was just like presenting. And then everybody there, and even my Sana Maiju, because she went with me, she was like, wow, like, you're really good at this. And I even felt like, oh my God, I'm actually really good at this.
Mm.
And then when I realized that, I was like, okay, this is, and I loved it. I loved being myself. I loved talking to camera. I love speaking, as you can tell. So I was literally like, okay, this is exactly what I want to get into and I want to do. So from there, that's when I was like, I'm going to be a presenter. And I just ran with it.
I love that. And so, like, you went to university, you were still joining all these different societies and associations and still continuing with your presenting. Once you graduated in 2019, it almost came full circle, isn't it? Like, you made your first gig with Sky.
Yeah. When, like, even when you say that, I'm just in shock and disbelief, because the way that it came about, especially since, like, as soon as I graduated, well, a few months after I graduated, it was a bit like, oh my God, it was a bit surreal. So yeah, it's kind of crazy how that all happened.
Yeah, the amount of time it's taken, like, from your graduation to you getting your first, like, TV gig, it's maybe a year at the most, right? How do you go from, you know, fresh out of uni to actually landing an amazing role?
Thank you.
And especially during lockdown. So that hasn't stopped you.
No, honestly. Like, when I explain the story, like, I'll explain how lockdown even affected the whole Sky thing. But so when I graduated in 2019, like I said, whilst I was at university, I joined the Media Society. So so I went to the University of Kent, and there was something called KTV, which is basically Kent Television, and I presented on there. So, like, for example, I used to go around to university students and ask them questions. So, for example, about Valentine's Day and stuff, and just like, fun little things like that. So I did presenting there. So when I graduated, I made a little show reel. And basically a show reel is like little videos and clips of me presenting at university, just to showcase my talent and like what I can do. And obviously I went to the University of Kent. So that's in Kent. So I had so much presenting experience in Kent. And then when I moved back to London, I was like, I feel like I have to start all over again. And London is so, like, it's so big and there's so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. And there's people trying to do the same thing that you're doing. So it's a bit more overwhelming because in Kent, I felt like it was a bit of a closer community.
Like a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah, basically. And I just felt like, oh, I was starting all over again, like from scratch. So obviously I made my show reel and I started with thinking in my head, how can I like start in London? And obviously I have to start from the very beginning, below to the top. Mm-hmm. I joined, I did a lot of random presenting things. I can't even remember them, but I just did like random. And by the way, when you're like starting, it's all free. You don't get paid for any of this stuff. You just do so much presenting work and you don't get paid for any of it. So I was just doing random presenting things, trying to discover what presenter I wanted to be and what field I wanted to go into. And then I also joined my local community radio station, which was a very small community radio station. There was only like three shows and it only just started. And it was like, it was literally a radio station that hadn't been established yet.
And did you just go and approach them saying, hey, like, I've just graduated, I'm looking for roles?
Yeah, kind of. It was through somebody else. So I'm from Brent. So I was working with the Brent community and somebody on that team referred me to a radio station in my community. Mm. And if I wanted to be part of it. So that's how it kind of came about. So I went and I realized that like he gave me my own show and I realized and I was still trying to find, it was actually a news show. I can't believe I did a news show because I'm really not a news presenter, but it was a news show about news that's going on in my community, like what's going on. So I was doing that and I was there for like, I would say a month. And then my radio station manager said to me that he knows an executive at Sky. And he was like, do you mind if I send him your show reel? And I was like, oh my God. I was like, send it. Of course, like send my show reel. So his name is Bob. So he sent my show reel to Bob and he watched it. And then he called me into the Sky Studios. So I went into the Sky Studios and he gave me a tour. I looked around and he admits it to me now to this day. But he was like, the reason why he invited me was to just show me around. He just wanted me to have the opportunity to look at the Sky Studios. And he thought it would be like 30 minutes long, like just us talking. But we ended up speaking for like 5 hours, wow. Which is so crazy. Like we were speaking for so long. I stayed there all day. And another thing as well, like he used to be a soldier and he was friends with loads of like Nepali men who were soldiers, mm-hmm. And how like one Nepali guy like saved his life and stuff.
Oh my God, I got chills.
Literally. So, and then he was like, I have so much respect for Nepali people. And I was like, oh, and I just felt like he was talking to me, even though I'm not the one that saved his life. I just so happened to be Nepali.
Like, you're welcome.
Hey, like, I understand. It's all right. But yeah, so then after that, a month after, he called me and said that he is producing this new show called Unmuted. And he asked me if I wanted to be the presenter on it. And I was just like, oh my God. I was like, I just couldn't believe like that was happening. I was like, thank you so much. I was like, yeah, of course. But obviously COVID happened and stuff. So it just didn't happen. And it was actually a year. There was like a year gap of me not hearing from him because we were just like, it's just not happening anymore and stuff. So it was only a few months into lockdown. He told me on Zoom that they're going to start production again and we still want you as a presenter. And only then, like a month after, like shooting happened very quickly. Mm. And it's only then that it started. But because before that, I was thinking, yeah, I missed my chance. Obviously, COVID happened, so I'm not going to be able to, like, be on the show. But it's okay. I was very accepting of it. I was like, it's okay. Because I kind of felt like, oh, my God, it was happening so quickly. So it's okay. Like, there's going to be some times where things are going to happen and it's not going to happen the way that you think it is. And sometimes you just have to accept that. And I was ready to accept that. But thankfully, like, it went the way it did.
I love the attitude that you have because it's very difficult, especially with the young generation as well, when like, you know, you almost had it, like it was right in front of you. And due to situation that's out of your control, you weren't able to start. And instead of going like, oh, like this fucking blows, like, you know, my life's shit, and going down that rabbit hole, you were like, no, you know, like, I still have time. I can still like go for something else, or like you're accepting of it. And that's very big of you, like, to have that kind of mindset.
Yeah, and I think that's so important as well, like, especially when it comes to age, because I just turned 23 and I really feel like, oh my God, I'm running out of time. And sometimes I do have, oh my God, so of course I have those times of doubt where I'm just like, oh my God, nothing's happening, or what I wanted to happen, like, by this year hasn't happened. But I think it's important to remember that your journey is your journey, and whatever's meant for you will always be for you. It will always come to you. So you like, I just feel like there's no point stressing or worrying as long as you put the work in. And another thing, as long as you put the work in and you have a pure heart and you're kind to people,
yeah,
things are going to come your way. Things are going to happen for you. And like, just to go back to when I did that little community radio station, another thing I could say is, like, if you're starting in the creative industry, I feel like it's so important to say yes to everything, even if you think that it's a small opportunity. Like that radio station, if I had never joined that, I would have never gotten Sky, which is so crazy to think.
Yeah. It's like a domino effect almost, isn't it? Like, you get saying yes to that opportunity, you actually doing it, and you're doing news, which you really didn't want to, but you said yes to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so important, especially as a creative, that you don't limit yourself into one kind of box and try to, especially when you're starting out, because you need to find out what you like and what you don't like. And the quicker you find that out, the easier it is for you in the long run. But yeah, because if I didn't say yes to that, I wouldn't have gotten that. So, and even when I was going to start this whole community radio station, I was just thinking, oh, like, oh, what am I really going to get out of this and stuff? But I just thought, you know what, it gives me experience and gives me time to practice before I get on to doing the main thing. So yeah, I would say say yes.
And what did you do during that lockdown period, especially when like you almost had that opportunity and everything stalled? How did you keep yourself busy?
Yeah, so with me, when it came to lockdown, and obviously that opportunity was going to come, but like I said, I really accepted at that time it wasn't coming. I need to move on with my life. Like, what's next? Because I have this thing where I just think, okay, if one thing doesn't happen, accept it and think, okay, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do to like still progress? And obviously that takes time. Like that, me going from that mindset could take months, but as long as I reach it, like, it's fine. You don't have to wake up. You don't have to be rejected the same day and then during the night think, okay, like, what am I going to do next? Give yourself time to like process it and be okay. And if you want to be sad, be sad. If you want to quickly go into the, like, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
During that time as well, because lockdown was happening, I also felt as if I shouldn't give myself pressure to do something. I feel like everybody was giving them pressure, giving themselves pressure, like, mm-hmm, what am I going to do during this time? I can't be lazy. I can't be mad.
How am I going to be productive? How am I going to show people that I've done X, Y, Z?
Exactly. And even on social media, loads of people saying, so how are you going to be productive during this time? And I hated that. I hated that people were saying that, because forget the fact that we were locked down. People are dying. People are mourning family members. People are mourning friends. People are going through a thing. People have health anxiety and are worried about their health. Like, I suffer from health anxiety. So sometimes I really worry about my health, especially obviously during COVID, because we never understood it and we still don't understand it, and we don't understand like how it works. So I like really, really did not give myself pressure to do something, and I only did something if it felt natural and if it felt like I wanted to. So when it started to feel natural, I'm really passionate about music. I love music, and that's the presenting that I'm going into, is music presenting. Because during the toughest times of my life, during the happiest times of my life, music will help you through anything. And I think everybody, well, most people can say the same thing about how music makes them feel. And the way music makes me feel is the way presenting makes me feel. When I'm doing it, I feel good. So I thought, let me just put those two together. So I looked for social media, like Instagram sites, where they were promoting upcoming artists, music artists. So I joined this one Instagram page. It's not around anymore. It was during lockdown, when it closed down. But it was called the Decipher Channel, where I would interview music artists. And this experience of me doing that will come into what I'm doing now. So it was really
important. I love that.
Yeah, so it was really important that I did that, because the upcoming music artists that I met have become so famous now in the space of like 1 year. And then I got to interview them for my radio show, which I have now, which is like really, really good. And I would have never gotten that music radio show. If I didn't do that music presenting, then I would have not gotten it, like my radio show and stuff. So I did that. And also during lockdown, again, I was having that conversation with my mom that I didn't know any Nepali inspirations. And I wanted to learn myself. And I thought, what a better time to learn during this time where I'm at home and I could just sit down and read stuff. So that's when I started Nepali Inspirations. And then it led on to Nepali Creatives, which I'm still going to do. I'm going to start the next season like really soon. But Nepali Creatives is just, again, like music artists, any sort of creatives, and celebrating them. So yeah, that's, I just tried to keep my mind occupied when I felt like I could.
And ended up being the first Nepali presenter in British mainstream media. And just seeing your name on TV, like, how did that feel?
So in the beginning, I thought, like, what would it feel like seeing myself on TV? Like, the first time I saw myself on TV, I was like, oh my God, it's going to feel so surreal for me seeing my face on TV. But, like, you know how sometimes you could put your YouTube on your TV? So with my videos, I've kind of already put it on TV, if that makes sense. So I kind of already saw myself on the TV screen from things like that. So I didn't really like, so when I first saw myself on TV, I was like, oh, okay. But what really like proper moved me was seeing my name on TV. Not seeing my, like, seeing my full name. So when I saw that, like, my phone, like, I've never ever in my life seen a Nepali name like on TV like that. And then for me to first see it with my own name, I was just like, oh my God, this is surreal. And then, like, when I looked to the side, like, my mom was crying her eyes out, like, watching me. So I was just thinking, like, I was just soaking up the moment, because I never expected, I didn't expect to feel that way, because I just expected to see myself on TV and think, wow, like, I'm on TV. But for me, it was more like seeing my name and seeing my culture and just like seeing someone like me on TV, but it being me.
That is such a big moment, because I think now we can see, like, with Chef Santosh as well, Sampada Gurung, like, you have seen Nepali people on TV, but as participants, you know, and that's still such a big moment. But then for Nepali population, for the Nepali audience to see someone from their culture, someone from their heritage on TV, but as a presenter, that's a massive deal. So I think for anyone older or younger, like, they're all looking up to me like, oh my God, you're doing something, like, you're representing all of us.
Yeah. And it's funny, because in the beginning, like, grandparents didn't really understand what it was. And then, like, when they saw me on TV and stuff, then they understood. They were like, oh, wow. Like, they finally understood, like, what I'm doing.
Now, I also saw that you managed to interview Sadiq Khan in one of the events that you were at. And for listeners who are not in the UK, Sadiq Khan is the mayor of London. How did it feel? Like, was it already planned that you were going to interview him, or was it just on the spot? Tell us about it.
Even with that, I just graduated with like a politics degree. So in my head, politics was actually a really big thing. So getting to interview Sadiq Khan was like, oh my God, like, it's like a politics. Wow.
Like, you're done. Now you can retire your political reporting career.
I honestly, it was like such a dream come true. So I knew I was going to interview him, but not really. So they were saying, oh, you might interview him. You might get the chance to interview him. And this was like the day before, because we were doing this Brent event. The reason why I interviewed him is because I'm from Brent and I was a presenter, like, as for the Brent community. And we have this thing called the London Borough of Culture. And Sadiq Khan for that year told us that we're the London Borough of Culture, because Brent is so diverse. There's so many cultures in Brent. And he kind of awarded us with that award. So he came for the opening night. So this was the opening night for the election. So everybody knew he was going to be there. And because I knew he was going to be there, I asked, like, do you think there's a chance I can interview him? Because with me, if I know that someone's going to be there, I always ask, can I interview them? Like, is there a chance to interview them? Mm-hmm. Just so that I can, you know, speak to them and like get more information. So they said maybe. They kept saying, telling me my maybe, whatever. So then last minute, one of Sadiq Khan's representatives knew that I wanted to interview him and said, you're going to get like 5 minutes to interview him as soon as he walks through the door. So he was like, have your questions ready. And I was just like, oh my God, because I didn't know that I was for sure going to interview him. And to be honest, deep in my heart, I just thought it's not going to happen. Like they always say might. And I feel like if you're saying might, it's probably not going to happen. And I understand how busy he is as well. Yeah. So that's why I was only allowed like 5 minutes as soon as he walked through the door. So when they said that to me, I got the camera guy, I got the mic, and I was just like, okay, what questions am I going to ask? What questions would I want to know? And then, yeah, so then as soon as he walked through the building, I was all up in his face. I was like, I don't know. Just started speaking. But yeah, he was really nice. And I just feel like it was my first proper experience of me kind of working under pressure. So that's what I remember, is me like going under pressure and kind of getting what I want in that moment.
Mm. Now, Suprina, I know you mentioned that you've just turned 23, you graduated just a few years ago, but from just our conversation, I can tell that, you know, you're very wise.
Oh my God, thank you.
Like the attitude, the way that you take things, you know, you're not hard on yourself, but you're also not very flaky, or like you're working towards your goals. So that's a really good combination to have. And one of the things I'm doing with this podcast is really trying to uncover like what people think about success, because I think a lot of the times people are driven by this concept of success, right? And it would be really cool to know what you think success is at this stage of your life.
That's a really good question. So for me, success, and I don't, obviously my definition can change, but I don't see it changing, because I feel like my definition of success could be everlasting, like could be forever. Because what I see as success is, one, like I'm really big on my family, like I love my family so much, so it's making my family proud and also giving back to my family, like helping them whenever they need help. So I feel like when I'm in a position to do that, I feel like I am successful. And also another thing where, because I have so many elements to success and what I feel like it looks like of success. So one would be my family. Two would be being like a successful TV presenter, but not just that, but being in a position where I can give back, but to Nepali people. Because I really feel like there's no harm in wanting to give back to your own people. And I feel like a lot of people say, and I feel like a lot of people from the Black community get this, like, oh, why are you just giving back to your people? Like, and I don't understand why that's an issue. I feel like people who are in a higher position, if they want to give back to their people, they should, especially if they need it the most.
Exactly.
I feel like when it comes to Nepali people in the UK, we're already Asian, so we're already a minority. But we are a minority within the Asian community. So it's more of a headache, because when it comes to things like, let's say, for example, BBC Asian Network, which is obviously BBC, but the Asian version, like they really celebrate like Indian culture. They really celebrate like, mostly Indian culture, like Pakistani culture, Bengali culture. Like they're really big on that. But people forget that Nepal is in South Asia also, and we don't get celebrated like as much as we do. And I don't feel there's no harm me being there, being a successful TV presenter and speaking about Nepal every interview that I go in, or speaking about Nepali people in every presenting work job that I do. Because if I don't do that, then I feel like then my whole culture and heritage and identity is forgotten about, because it's already been pushed to side. So I would see as myself being successful, as me being a successful TV presenter and creating an organization specifically for Nepali creatives, just because I feel like a lot of, obviously coming from an Asian family as well, and they're not really comfortable going, and they don't know the route to take, specifically like doing a course like once a year to help Nepali creatives get into the industry and secure a job and get a job in that industry that they want to get into. And yeah, and being another thing that's, I would see myself as being successful, being happy. I feel like not a lot of people say that as well. I feel like happiness, I just want to be happy. And I just want to be able to have people around me that want the best for me. I feel like I'll be successful if I'm older and I look around me at the people close to me and they, and I know that they all have pure hearts and good intentions. And yeah, I feel like that for me is such a successful life.
I feel like when I was your age, Suprina, to be really honest, these were none of my goals. Like absolutely none of them. I think I was worried about where I'm going to go drinking or dancing or, you know, or which, yeah, like where are we going to hang out and thinking about giving back to the community. I think I was running away from the community at that age. Like I didn't want to be associated with that. Like it's taken me a very, very long time to come into the mindset that I have today and just like wanting to be part of this community.
Yeah.
So to see that for someone like yourself is just very inspiring in a sense that I'm glad that generation nowadays, they're thinking this way because that means growth.
Yeah. Oh my God. I 100% agree. And I just feel as if like, and I get what you mean because I was like where you're at, where I didn't want to give back to Nepali, not give back to Nepali community, but I didn't want to integrate with them just because I, like I said, I felt already left out and I felt like I didn't belong and stuff. But it's only like a few years ago where I've changed my mentality that I am Nepali and no one could tell me otherwise. And the way that I go about it, identify myself in the Nepali community is important because it just shows that there's so many different people in our community. And I'm just representing the side that I am in and what it looks like for me, like what being Nepali looks like for me, not anyone else, because I do actually get messages and of people sending me hate, like Nepali people like sending me hate.
Really?
Yeah, like saying things like, oh, you think you know about community but you don't. I'm not saying I do. I know I don't. Like I know I don't, but I'm just doing the best that I can and that I feel like could represent. Like somebody even sent me a message like, oh, you can't even pronounce Nepali words properly, why are you even speaking about it? And I'm just thinking like, at least I'm talking about, you know, like
how you go into your community is, I think everyone has their own ways, right? Like some people attend events, some people do different things, and it's okay to find your own way to reach out to your community. If everyone did the same thing, then where is the originality? Like for a long time, I associated being part of Nepali community as attending all those barbecue parties and, you know, listening to all your elders, like uncles and aunties saying all these things about like, oh, what is she doing? What is he doing? Like comparing. And that was a big thing for me not to be part of that community. I was like, I don't want to go. Like, I just feel sick every time I go to these events.
Mm.
But that's not the whole part about a community, right? Like you can be engaged in a community in different ways. And that's what I've come to find in recent years. You know, you find your own ways and you're doing that. So just keep on doing it.
Thank you. And I agree because I feel like everybody is unique in their own way. So I think if you just find your strength and find what you could bring to the Nepali community and the strength to help you integrate, then use that because no one's going to do it better than yourself.
Exactly. Now, Suprina, just to wrap things up, if there's any advice you could give to our listeners who may be feeling lost or, you know, need to find that inspiration or that passion or that drive to really go after their goals, what would you say?
I would say, like, and I think I've said this throughout the interview, is don't be hard on yourself, because I think it's very easy once you start feeling like being hard on yourself, you lose more and more hope. And like, I feel like there's always hope and you should allow yourself some days to feel like maybe one day you really tried, you applied to so many jobs, you've got so much experience, you did so much. And then maybe the week after that, you haven't worked all week. But that's okay. Like, I feel like you should allow yourself and enjoy the journey. Don't rush it. Don't rush to get to where you want. And if you're feeling lost, again, say yes to a lot of things. Say yes, maybe not to everything, because if it's something that you really don't want to do, don't do it. But say yes to a lot of things to find yourself and remember that you just got to enjoy the journey and have faith. And just, I know that's so easier said than done, but find something that helps you. Like, I really believe in God and I pray a lot, and that really helps me like have faith to like move forward, and I always think that whatever's meant for me will be for me, and you wouldn't have to force it or stress it. So find that one thing that helps you towards that direction and helps you keep the faith. And another piece of advice I would give is to network is so important. I feel like everybody says this, but I don't think people understand how important networking is. I wouldn't have gotten any of my opportunities if it wasn't for networking, if it wasn't for speaking to people. And that can even be sending a message on LinkedIn or sending a message in DMs or meeting someone and then following up with them after. I think that's so important. And so important to be kind and be nice to everyone. Like, just don't be a shit person. Like, please don't be a shit person.
And no more hate messages. If you see someone in the community trying to do good, trying to represent the community, like, let's support one another and not try to bring them down. Like, I think that's just not okay.
I agree. And I just feel like, I don't know why people are mean. Like, I just don't understand it, because in my heart, I could never be mean to someone for no reason. Like,
especially someone you don't know and someone who's trying to do a good thing.
I just don't understand it. And if people do send you hate or whatever, just know, or even if it's those maybe aunties in your community who are saying, why are you doing this? Why is she doing this? What kind of job is this? Just know that they're only saying that because they're not happy within themselves, and they're just not happy with where their life is, and they just wish that you could do and have the confidence to do what you're doing. So don't even, trust me, don't even stress it. Just go and do what
it's,
you want.
It's not about you, it's about them.
100%. And that is true in every case. Like, there's, yeah.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much again, Suprina. It's been lovely chatting with you and just talking about everything, media and your life.
No, thank you so much for having me. Like, honestly, I love doing podcasts like this. I love just speaking. And you're really nice to talk to as well. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations as much as I do, please share with your friends and family. If you'd like to share your feedback, you can reach us on Instagram at hamro.yatra or email askhamroyatra@gmail.com. I love hearing from you, so keep them coming.